headlines, interviews, and commentary. And then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints on KBOO, an extended report today from the Gaza Strip, where Israel launched a major military offensive, and a look at U.S. policy toward Honduras that has caused so many children to head north toward the U.S. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Leanne Krantz welcomes local author Polly Dugan to talk about her debut short story collection, So Much a Part of You. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, today they feature stand-up economist Yoram Bauman, who's co-authored the new book, The Cartoon Introduction to Climate Change, and will join Gus Frederick of the Homer Davenport Project on a tour of Oregon cartoon history and a preview of an upcoming political art show in Silverton. That's all coming up this morning on KBOO. Up next, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell hosting an hour-long edition of the show. Today, why can't the U.S. help child refugees? And other questions on the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around. That is coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Debtors Assembly Portland on Saturday, July 12th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Holiday Park, located at Northeast 11th and Holiday near the Lloyd Center MAX stop. Hosted by Strike Debt Portland, the Debtors Assembly will be a public gathering of neighbors and community leaders, seeing debt in a new way, one of social justice. Experts will speak on how the debt industries work and how they enable poverty and wealth inequality. And finally, organizers will lead group conversation on building creative ideas for local collective resistance against unjust debts. Again, that's Saturday, July 12th at 3 p.m. in Holiday Park. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda program and left opinion. On your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Will Israel reinvade the Gaza ghetto? And what exactly qualifies as a humanitarian crisis on the U.S. border? We'll talk about that and more of the news you're not supposed to know on this hour-long program, and we'll be inviting your calls. Super Typhoon Niyogiri will hit the Fukushima nuclear disaster site later today. With near 100-mile-per-hour winds and torrential rains, a Japanese official quoted in the UK Telegraph said, "We are tying up cables and hoses and making sure cranes and booms don't fall. We will also beep up patrols in areas where water could flow in." The storm's massive downpours present an extra headache for the plant, where workers are locked in a daily struggle to contain huge amounts of contaminated water used to keep the destroyed reactors cool, as well as tainted groundwater leaking into the sea. From the Irish Times, at least 74 Palestinians, most of them civilians, actually the latest I've heard is that it's now over 80, have been killed in Israel's Gaza offensive, Palestinian officials said today, and militants kept up rocket attacks on Tel Aviv and other cities in warfare, showing no signs of ending soon. Eight Palestinian family members including 5 children, were killed in an early morning airstrike that destroyed at least 2 homes in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. And that's according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Israel's military made no comment on what would be the deadliest strike since the offensive began on Tuesday. Palestinian relatives mourned during the funeral of members of Hamad family in Beit Hanun. We have long days of fighting ahead of us, Moshe Yaalon, the Israeli defense minister, said on Twitter, speaking of the offensive, which began after a buildup of violence following the killing of 3 Jewish students last month and the murder of a Palestinian teen in a suspected revenge attack. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who will brief the Security Council on the crisis, condemned the rocket attacks and urged Israel to show restraint. He said Gaza is on a knife edge. Medical officials in Hamas-dominated Gaza said at least 60 civilians, including a 4-year-old girl and boy aged 5 who were killed on Thursday, were among the Palestinians who have died in Israeli attacks since Tuesday. Israel said it has struck more than 750 targets in its offensive and said it was to halt the rocket fire. And of course, the rocket fire, departing from this text, it was to halt the bombing. And back and forth it goes. Irish Times also writes, across the Gaza Strip, plumes of smoke and rubble marked the aftermath of Israeli attacks. In the most serious outbreak of hostilities between Palestinian militants and Israel's powerful armed forces in 2 years. Khalid Ali, a Gaza taxi driver, was quoted saying, the Israelis say they are fighting Hamas and fighting gunmen, while all the bodies we have seen on television are those of women and children, end quote. Rocket barrages on Israel are going on. The military said there had been 365 since Tuesday. That's slightly out of date. There's more have gone on. They have caused no fatalities or serious injuries, due in part to interceptions by Israel's partly U.S.-funded Iron Dome aerial defense system. But the wailing of air raid sirens has paralyzed businesses in southern communities and sent hundreds of thousands of people scrambling for shelter in Tel Aviv, the commercial capital, where 2 rockets were shot down yesterday. Offices and shops remained open, though, and roads are clogged with traffic. The Irish Times also writes, Israel's targets in the Gaza Strip have included militant commanders' homes, which it described as command and control centers. Palestinian officials put the number of dwellings either destroyed or damaged as of yesterday at more than 120. Local residents said some of the houses did not belong to fighters. U.S.-backed Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who is based in the West Bank, has denounced the offensive, saying this war is not against Hamas or any faction, but against the Palestinian people, end quote. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel said in a statement yesterday that Hamas was committing a double war crime. Quote, it targets Israeli civilians while hiding behind Palestinian civilians, end quote. Owners of some of the targeted homes received telephone warnings from Israel to get out, or they got so-called knock-on-the-door missiles, which do not carry explosive warheads, first fired as a signal to evacuate. Israeli leaders, who have popular support for the Gaza offensive, also warned that the air offensive could be expanded into a ground invasion of one of the world's most densely populated ghettos. So there's more to that article. You can find it at the Irish Times. I have a suggestion. Both sides could turn in their suicide vests, and both sides could turn in their rockets, and both sides could turn in their submarines. And that the Palestinians, as well as the Israelis, could turn in all of their satellites, nukes, tanks, and attack aircraft. And both sides, both the Israelis and the Palestinians, I think, should tear down walls and return lands taken. What do you say? There are some other news items that I want to bring up here. Global Research writer Sayer G. writes, a highly concerning new study published in the journal Biomedical Research International reveals that despite the still relatively benign reputation of agrochemicals such as Roundup herbicide, many chemical formulations upon which the modern agricultural system depend are far more toxic than present regulatory tests performed on them reveal. Roundup herbicide, for example, was found to be 125 times more toxic than its active ingredient, glyphosate, studied in isolation. Title of the study is Major Pesticides Are More Toxic to Human Cells Than Their Declared Active Principles. And the study evaluated to what extent the active principle, in this case it would be glyphosate, and the so-called inert ingredients would be. And those so-called inert ingredients are adjuvants in globally popular formulations, accounting for the toxicity of 9 major pesticides, 3 herbicides, 3 insecticides, and 3 fungicides. This all gets sprayed together, and Sire G. writes, the paper describes how the agricultural industry conceals the true toxicity of their chemical formulations by focusing on the health risks associated with only one so-called active principle in their complex formulations. Sets the public up for mass poisoning through the determination of an acceptable level of harm by those one ingredients, even though they're all sprayed together, you see. Quoting, pesticides are used throughout the world as mixtures called formulations. They contain adjuvants, which are often kept confidential and are called inerts by the manufacturing companies, plus a declared active principle, which is the only one tested in the longest toxicological regulatory test performed on mammals. This allows the calculation of an acceptable daily intake, which simply does not reflect the fact that all of these things are sprayed together, and it is all of them together that makes them poisonous. And the number, once again, was, let's see, what was that number? Was it 125? Yes, 125 times more toxic than has been revealed. So when you hear that Roundup is harmless to human cells, they're lying. It's 10 minutes. It's almost 11 minutes after 9 a.m. here on KBOO Portland. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I would like to invite your phone calls to talk about the topics of the day. And those phone calls can be brought in at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And go ahead and call in, and let's see what you're thinking about what's going on. I also want to talk about the humanitarian crisis on the borders as the Children's Crusade comes here in its bare feet. First, a couple more news headlines. Two servers in Germany, in Berlin and Nuremberg, are under surveillance by the NSA, merely searching the web for the privacy-enhancing software tools outlined in the X-Keyscore rules, causes the NSA to mark and track the IP address of the person doing the search, talking about Tor. Not only are German privacy software users tracked, but the source code shows that privacy software users worldwide are tracked by the NSA. Among the NSA's target is the Tor network, funded primarily by the U.S. government to aid democracy advocates in authoritarian states. This is from Das Erste website in Germany, daserste.de. The X-Keyscore rules, they write, reveal that the NSA tracks all connections to a server that hosts part of an anonymous email service at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It also records details about visits to a popular internet journal for Linux operation systems users called the Linux Journal, the original magazine of the Linux community, and it calls it an extremist forum. So if you've connected to the Linux Journal, or if you've even looked up Tor, you are being tracked by the NSA. Aren't you glad? From Radio Havana, Cuba, Red Bull North America Incorporated has agreed to pay a roughly $90,000 fine to the U.S. for sending 7 people to Cuba to film a documentary, according to the U.S. Treasury Department. Thus, Red Bull has become one of the latest victims, together with French bank BNP, of U.S. punitive sanctions on Cuba. The Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control claims that 7 representatives of the U.S. unit of the Austrian firm Red Bull visited Cuba in June 2009 on a trip approved by Red Bull's North American office, who apparently took steps to conceal the transactions. What were they thinking? That they had freedom of travel from the U.S.? Other recent victims, Radio Havana writes, of the Treasury Department's witch hunt against companies involved in Cuba travel or business include the Dutch travel company CWTBV and American International Group Incorporated. So, turning to the humanitarian crisis, the Children's Crusade. Your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. It's been reported that the U.S. will turn away child migrants unless they can prove that they are facing a humanitarian crisis in their home country. So, the legal burden shifts from well-paid English-speaking U.S. judges and prosecutors to non-English-speaking children. Literally, they have to sit in court, little kids, and take on these professionals. Now, if they could speak English and legalese, maybe they'd ask Maybe they'd ask if traveling thousands of miles as a desperate and starving child across deserts on the rooftops of freight trains and by foot passing the dead children in their tracks to avoid machine gun wielding torture thugs and drug gangs, if that doesn't qualify as a humanitarian crisis, then what the hell does? What do those words even mean? Humanitarian crisis. 503-231-8187 and Leah is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. I wanted to respond to the earlier your comments on Roundup. The genetic roulette, the DVD Genetic Roulette, is available online, and it's a wonderful expose on GMOs, Monsanto's, and just I urge everyone to read it because this is coming on our ballots this fall. And it's a wonderful way to involve yourself. And you have a copy of that, Teresa.
I do.
So thank you.
All right, then.
And thanks for your program.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And we'd like to ask you to comment on the issues that I've been bringing up. We have an hour to talk. And so I'm looking forward to this, talking with you, seeing what you think. Now, turning to Layla Razavi's piece in the ACLU.org, the arrival of tens of thousands of young migrant children, many of them traveling alone, mirrors the escalating violence of Central American homelands, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, among the countries with the five highest murder rates in the world. And departing from that text isn't ironic that they're coming to another country with a high murder rate. But anyway, Layla Razavi writes, so it's no accident that since last October alone, some 52,000 unaccompanied children have arrived in the United States, mostly from Central America, according to the government. And departing from that and turning to La Jornada, they write, although the issue of the humanitarian crisis of unaccompanied migrant children began to gather in the media in recent months, the problem's not new. Quoting Olga Sanchez Martinez, winner of the National Human Rights Award in Mexico, she said, it has always existed, but the violence of other crimes concealed the phenomenon. She says, our organization started in 1991 to help sick migrants and have since supported child amputees under the age of 14. She said, this year alone, her organization has rescued more than 10,000 unaccompanied minors. Turning again to ACLU.org and the article by Layla Razavi, how we as a country choose to deal with this humanitarian crisis says a lot about our values and who we are as a people. There are no simple solutions, but the hostile response by some in the small community of Murrieta last week isn't one that should be repeated. Federal officials flew 136 of the detained migrants who had been apprehended at the Texas border to San Diego, where they were put on a bus to a border control facility in Murrieta for processing. A throng of angry local residents waited outside the facility holding disparaging signs telling the migrants to go home. But by the week's end, protesters spewing hate were outnumbered by others who had come to show support for the migrants. And depart from the text, hooray for them, outnumbered by others who'd come to show support. Well, yeah. I mean, are we humans in this country? Do we take care of kids who've gone through a hellish ordeal like that? Apparently, some of us want to challenge that categorization as humans who care about other humans. And so you've seen the pictures, I suppose, of people angrily waving signs. I tuned into some AM hate radio late last night, and I could hear them agitating against the migrants, claiming that they had boosted overpopulation in the country and that they were coming here for no reason that anyone could discern except for just greed and wanting to be part of the American dream and all that sort of hooey. I have some more information that I'll bring in just a few moments about exactly what these people are fleeing and how the U.S. corporate rule set up the horror that they are fleeing. And it is a horror. And you would run too, even if you were a kid. I guarantee you that. But from Razavi on ACLU.org, the actions of extremists should not overshadow the humane response of most Americans who have offered the kind of welcome parents would offer. Faith groups and community organizations in San Diego and around the country have jumped at the opportunity to help the unaccompanied child migrants by donating time, services, and basic necessities like clothes, diapers, and food. Children of immigrants often speak of winning the birth lottery because we know how, she writes, how randomly lucky we are to live here. But for the children fleeing Central America right now, the crisis is not like playing the lottery. It's more like playing Russian roulette. There are kids who will end up dying in the desert from heat and exhaustion. There are those who are stranded alone in a Mexican shelter because they were turned away at the U.S. border. Others are housed for weeks in a Border Patrol holding facility, sleeping on crowded floors, shoulder to shoulder. Departing from the text, maybe you've seen the pictures. They are sleeping on the floor. They are shoulder to shoulder. Their blankets are little pieces of shiny plastic. This is how we treat kids, children. Many, she writes, will be put on a plane and deported right back to the country they fled in fear of violence and persecution. Let's remember that the United States has a system in place to ensure that every child arriving on our shores can ask for asylum or otherwise seek protection. The government should not pervert that system for the sake of expediency, nor should it shrink the protections available to these young migrants if it seems wants to do. As it seems want to do. Massive deportation of children is not in the American tradition, and departing again from the text, it's also illegal under international agreements. Because it's a horrific thing to do. Now, why are these people running here? I'm going to turn to that for a moment. Your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Quoting ProjectCensored.org, WikiLeaks has revealed U.S. ties to Honduras' wealthiest businessman and political heavyweight, Miguel Facus. This is just one example. Miguel Facus, private security guards, known locally as sicarios, have been connected with assassinations and armed attacks in the impoverished countryside of the Aguan Valley in Honduras, where Facus owns one-fifth of the land, approximately one-fifth of the land. Human rights groups all over the world are claiming Facus' relationship with paramilitary groups throughout Honduras, as well as connections with large cocaine shipments landing on Facus' heavily guarded compound. Despite his involvement with the coup in Honduras, the U.S. Embassy has met at least twice with Facus. Also, the U.S. continues to funnel funds into the training of the military and police forces in Honduras, known to be operating jointly with the security operations of Facus. Honduran President Porfirio Lobo, installed by the U.S., continues to speak out about his commitment to defending human rights and a war on drugs with the backing of Obama. In reality, both are supporting Facus' economic interests in a war against Honduran campesinos. That's under the title WikiLeaks Honduras U.S. Link to Brutal Businessman. You can find that on ProjectCensored.org. And I would add, this comes in a long history of U.S. involvement with death squads and their drug connections. If you're interested in how this sort of thing works, then it would be worth your while to use a search engine, news search engine, and look up Project Mayan Jaguar. And you may also want to look at narconews.net. The U.S. continues to... When I say the U.S., I mean the DEA continues to traffic cocaine. Isn't that charming? Oh, by the way, this is an opinion program. So if you arrest me, it will be for my opinion, DEA. This sort of thing has been going on. The classic work on this is The Politics of Heroin by Alfred W. McCoy, a rather difficult book to get, but worth the effort. And, of course, there's been much written about this. From Counterpunch, The Flood from the North, Washington's Role in Triggering the Child Migrant Crisis. Javier Best wrote, "Rare is the occasion that power systems voluntarily expose the true character of their policies. Mountains of disinformation and distortion are critical to keep the prying eyes of the public at bay. President Obama recently broke with this norm on the White House lawn. In an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, he angrily denounced Central American parents for sending their children to the U.S. border." Quote, "Don't send your children to the border, they'll get sent back," end quote. That's what Obama said, and these words plausibly aroused memories throughout the region of a darker era when the U.S. played a much deadlier role. In her illuminating study, They Take Our Jobs and 20 Other Myths About Immigration, historian Aviva Chomsky documents the discrimination Central America migrants faced in the 1980s. Devastated by Reagan's terrorist war against the region, thousands of Central Americans traveled north to escape the violence of U.S.-backed death squads. Of the 45,000 Salvadoran refugees that applied for asylum between 1984 and 1990, only 2.6 were approved. Yeah, I said 2.6. Number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Harry's on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Yes, I didn't realize Honduras actually disintegrated as they did. The last I remember was there was a coup, and this is a few years ago, and Obama just didn't do anything about it.
Well, that was under Bush, but...
Under Bush, okay.
But you're correct that Obama is collaborating with the current power regime.
Yes, and then of course, it was time for another election, and he couldn't go back and run. I didn't realize Honduras was in such terrible shape.
Well, it's not exactly top news here in the U.S.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But I noticed all the different news reports from different areas. Do you ever get news reports from the French?
I use French reports from time to time. I don't get them. I don't have them regularly bookmarked.
Okay. What about like from Havana or Hanoi or?
I use Radio Havana pretty frequently. I just quoted them earlier about a different situation, and it was about their embargo. When I want information about this, I also pull up La Jornada. If you're looking for sources, I look for La Jornada in Mexico City. I was also looking at La Prensa in Mexico City, although they're much more mainstream. Let's see, other sources on this topic, as I was saying, narconews.com is a good English language source.
Okay. What about Pravda?
Pravda.ru is a mixed bag website these days. I think Izvestia is still around as well, and they have an English language edition. I don't use them very much. There are occasionally, it depends on what's going on, what you want to have covered. I use websites like that with a grain of salt because they are going to report, they're going to have a vested interest in reporting accurately on certain topics, and they will have a vested interest in promoting propaganda. And Pravda, of course, has always been the opposite of Pravda, which means truth.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in. Bye. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Well, I talked down Pravda, but actually you can find some good stuff on there. You have to keep your frontal lobe switched on. And Mike's on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning. You're on the air on KBOO.
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, that I am totally opposed to people coming in from Mexico and Honduras. I believe that those people, it's their own fault. I mean, why come to America? America didn't get this way on its own. I mean, we had to fight to make America the way it is. And so when these people come across the border, they should stay there in their own country and fight to make things better there instead of coming over here, jumping on the bandwagon in a society that other people had to suffer to make that way. So, and then when they come here, a lot of you don't even know if they've had all their shots. You don't know what kind of diseases they're bringing across the border. You don't know what kind of criminal elements is creeping over here. I've heard stories of Mexicans coming across the border, kill people, then sneak back over to Mexico. No, man, I'm against that totally.
Well, I wonder if we're talking about the same phenomenon. I was talking about the 50,000 many barefoot children who are escaping the violence of drug squads that have been funded by U.S. Institutions such as Citibank. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about, it all stems from the same thing. I mean, their parents are sending them over here. I mean, the kids didn't get the idea, the bright idea themselves, hey, let's go to America. Somebody put that in their heads. Somebody directed it and orchestrated it. So I think they should be sent back, period.
That's what you said last hour as well, and so I'll just leave that there, and thank you for your opinion. You. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. 9,500 Guatemalan refugees in the same period I was talking about earlier, the earlier U.S. Death Squad war against Central America, came here, and merely 1.8% of them were approved on these humanitarian grounds. And this is what I was talking about earlier, departing from that text. What do you call it? What's humanitarian? If it's not a humanitarian crisis when people have to cross thousands of miles, dying along the way out of absolute terror from a place that they can no longer live because of drug gangs that are supported by U.S. demand and U.S. unofficial deep state shenanigans. If that's not a humanitarian crisis, what is? And who's to blame if it's not the country that drives the drug trade and which profits its secret police or allows its secret police to profit from engaging in the drug trade? Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I believe I have a couple of people on the line. I'll just go to the next caller. That would be Francis. Hi, Francis.
Hi. I'm hoping these children have some kind of legal representation.
Well, the latest that I've heard is that they famously do not.
Okay, so who gets to make the statement that they, I mean, it should be obvious to any judge in the world that if all these children are here, there's a desperate situation going on in their country, and that should be enough right there to grant them some kind of asylum.
I think you're exactly right about that, but that, of course, is not what is happening. The judges and prosecutors are being very, shall we say, legalistic about this and pointing out that the law says that they must establish that they have a humanitarian crisis in their home country, which, of course, someone who doesn't even speak English and, of course, has no familiarity with the U.S. court system cannot do. And therefore, they're getting deported back in huge numbers, even though they will be facing the same desperate conditions that caused them to cross thousands of miles by themselves in the first place.
To me, there's no question that the desperate situation has already been established. But as far as these drug cartels go, I want somebody to, at some point, rather than just speaking to the drug cartels in Central America, speak to the ones here who are receiving the drugs and making the bank in this country. They never do. You know, who are those people?
Well, Citibank's part of it.
Somebody from Central America, but nobody here in the United States. No, there's no big head honcho gangster here in the United States making any kind of money off of these drugs.
Good point.
A joke.
Good point.
Okay.